The time is now 3:57. The Warwick Finance Committee is hereby open for the discussion on the budget. If I may, item number one, PCR 75-21, resolution relative to transfer supplemental appropriations and emergency appropriations. If I may have a motion for public discussion.
So moved.
Move to hold.
Move to hold public hearings. That was made and seconded. All those in favor? Aye.
Seven.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. That's item number two, PCR 76-21, resolution adopting and setting the tax rate for the city of Warwick in the financial year beginning July 1st, 2021, ending July 30th, 2022. May I have a motion to move that for public discussion?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. This is just the committee for right now. Thank you. And Mr. President, Mr. President.
Can I speak for a second?
Yeah. You're echoing really bad.
You need to hold these two.
Solicitor Walsh, is that we need to hold them or do we wait and we pause?
The committee can, historically, if I recall, we discharge them from the committee or send the recommendation for public hearing. The council, as it proceeds through the rest of the week, would traditionally hold it until all discussions have completed, and then we would still have the 24-hour cooling off period for it to be held.
Understood. I'm not sure
if Lynn was...
That's what I was trying to get you to do. I want you to hold those to 5:27, and then the Finance Committee will open on 5:27 for these two items before the vote in the full council.
We need to move them first, Lynn. We need to have the discussion, and we'll hold them at the end. They needed to move them so we could talk about it. If we just hold it, then it's over.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. President, yes, sir. The floor is yours.
Okay.
So to be clear, I
have all the council people turn on their cameras here. I want to make sure everybody's here before we call the meeting to order. Nine. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. I call the city council meeting for May 24th, 2021. The following options are available to access this meeting. You may access or participate in the meeting using the Zoom application on a smart device or on a PC via the web at zoom.us and clicking on join a meeting in the upper right hand of the page. The webinar ID number this evening is 978-8786-9794. Again, all this information will be on our website as well. Anyone wanting to participate via telephone only may call one of the following numbers. Non-toll-free numbers. While most mobile carriers do not place an extra charge on customers for toll calls, it is up to you to check with your carrier concerning potential charges you would be responsible for. The first number this evening is 1-646-558-8656. The next number is 1-301-715-8592. The next number is 1-312-626-6799. The next number is 1-669-900-9128. And the next number is 1-253-215-8782. And the next number is 1-346-248-7799. Toll-free numbers from anywhere in the United States, you can reach us at 1-877-853-5447. The next number is 1-888 1-888-788-0099. The next number is 1-833-548-0276. The next number is 1-833-548-0282. Please note, if you're experiencing trouble connecting via a toll-free number, please try the next number on the list. Again, all these numbers and information is on the City Council's website. You will then need to punch in web ID number 9788786-9794 on your touchdown keypad. While everyone joining the meeting will be muted, if at the appropriate time during the proceedings you wish to ask a question, you may, if using a smartphone or a PC, click on the raise hand icon. The meeting moderator will then ask for the participant having raised their hand to be unmuted. After the question, answer, and any further discussion, the participant will be muted again and we will need to click on raise hand icon or punch in star 9 to ask another question. If phoning in, punch star 9 on the touchtone keypad. The moderator will indicate when it is your turn to comment or ask a question. At this time, I'm going to ask the clerk to call the roll.
Mr. McAllister?
Here.
Mr. Foley?
Here.
Mr. Gephardt?
Here.
Mr. Howe?
Here.
Mr. Lattisa?
Here.
Mr. McElroy? Mr. McElroy? Mr. McElroy? Mr. Ricks?
Here.
Mr. Snappy?
Here.
Here.
Ricks is also here.
Here.
Is Mr. McElroy here? All right, 9 present.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. At this time, I'd like to introduce Mayor Picozzi to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Mayor?
Thank you. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic, for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Before we start the meeting, I would just like to have a moment of silence for our friend and colleague who passed away and was buried this morning, Mayor Joe Solomon. He was a friend and a true advocate for the citizens of Warwick. So I ask for a moment of silence for Mayor Joe Solomon. Thank you very much. Before we start the meeting, I would just like to call on the City Council Solicitor, Mr. Conley, to just give us a quick overview of the executive order and where we stand at this time. Mr. Conley.
Thank you, Mr. President. I know we all have a long evening ahead of us. I apologize in advance for this being a little bit longer than my usual commentary. But the order issued on Friday, 2157, there's already been a lot of public comment and discussion about it, some of which is inaccurate. And I've received a lot of questions, so I want to make sure I respond to all of that. As I said a moment ago, Executive Order 2157 issued just this Friday. As a result of that order, there are no longer any capacity restrictions for venues of public assembly, which is what we are. In paragraph 7 and 8, however, the order does address public assembly for government establishments and says that we must comply with applicable executive orders and all of the Department of Health's regulations, including those related to screening of individuals, wearing masks or cloth face coverings, and posting appropriate signs and other health and safety protocols. That particularly now what that means is that on-site individuals who are not fully vaccinated must continue to wear masks or cloth face coverings. Being fully vaccinated means someone that has received all the recommended dosages of the particular vaccine that has been administered to them, and that 14 days has elapsed since the administration of those dosages. Nothing in this order prohibits or otherwise prevents public assembly or a government meeting from requiring stricter or more restrictive COVID protocols. Specifically as to masks and face coverings, 2158 says that they are no longer required indoors or outdoors for anyone, again, who has passed that vaccine standard of 14 days post-vaccination. It also essentially says that this will remain in full force and effect through June 18. It also specifies that the Executive Order 2140 regarding alternate accessible means for public safety, to the public for remote public meetings remains in full force and effect. It's reasonable to expect that on May 27th, we will see a further extension of the requirement for alternate accessible means for all our public hearings. That's a summary. I might add an aside to Executive Order 2157 as it relates to our public hearings on the budget. We posted our open meetings notice prior to the issuance of the executive order. So our open meetings notice is essentially going to govern our conduct of these two meetings, which, as you noted at the beginning the session, Mr. President, is for a virtual public hearing for the posted notices for the budget. If there's any other questions, I'd do my best to answer them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Conley. Okay, at this time, we will start the public meeting. The purpose of this meeting is a public hearing on the proposed budget for the fiscal year 2021 to 2022. At this time, I'm going to ask Mayor Picozzi.
Mr. President, members of City Council, preparation for the budget in front of you tonight began several months ago. My goal was to present to you a budget that did not call for a property tax increase, and that goal has been achieved. Homeowners and business owners are struggling because of this pandemic, and I know that you join me in the desire not to put any further burden on them. This budget includes three special initiatives. The first is to recall the city employees that were laid off last year. We cannot continue to provide the quality of services. We're failing to provide the quality of services the people of this city deserve at the current staffing levels. The second is a line item for lease purchase to begin a continuing program to replace our decrepit equipment and vehicles. And the third is an allowance for a half year's lease on the AAA Sawtooth building, which will serve as a central location for our city's offices and services for many years to come. You recently voted for this long-term lease, and I'm pleased to report that early today, I officially signed the lease. Also in this budget is maintenance of effort for the school department. Since taking office, I've met biweekly with the superintendent. We've always been aware of each other's respective financial positions. The superintendent and school's finance director met with me several weeks ago and told me that they needed no additional appropriation this year. They said that because of a sharp decline in student population, the teacher layoffs were necessary, and that has been done. But with no additional appropriation, there would be no programs cut with no additional appropriation. During the school department's budget process, the school committee added an additional $500,000. And that $500,000 would result in a tax increase, and it's not a part of my budget. This budget was crafted by my finance director, Peter Schaefer, and his staff. You're all familiar with Peter. He's renowned all over Rhode Island as one of the best in the business. Also assisting me in the process was planning director, Bruce Kaiser. Bruce was formerly the finance director here in Warwick. He's been a town manager in two different municipalities. His budget was prepared by experts. I'm now going to turn this over to Peter.
Thank you, Mayor. Also with us today at the head table is Jen Soita, the budget analyst for the city, and Lynn Proger, the city treasurer. I'm going to just talk a little bit. We're doing the school department first. I'm just going to talk a little bit about this budget in the context of the school department. And Mr. President, after the school department finishes, I might want to go a little bit further on the total budget as it relates to city services. But this budget, a lot of what we had to deal with in crafting this budget was figuring out how to use American Rescue Funds, which were appropriated by Congress, signed by and enacted by the president in March. And the city is going to be receiving over an interval beginning last week and running for a year, approximately $39 million in American Rescue Funds. The school department has access to another pot of funds to help them in their school department. As the mayor said, what we have here is a maintenance of effort, city funds of $130 million going to the school department. They've had an enrollment decline of around 400. They have a labor agreement going forward, and they have other resources. And I really want to turn it over to the school department now, get their presentation, and I may speak to you a little bit further later on other initiatives in the city budget.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. So at this time, I need a motion to open the public hearing. Do I have a motion?
Moved.
Motion by Councilman Foley, second by Councilman Lanister, Councilman Gephardt, Councilman Howe, Councilman McElroy. All those in favor will do a voice vote. All those in favor of opening the public hearing, say aye.
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 All those opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. The first up this evening is going to be the school department, who are going to join us. And just a note from my colleagues on the council, if you'd like to ask a question, please just use the raise your hand icon because it's hard to see with all the different screens here. So if you raise your hand on the icon, I can identify you. And Phil and Chris, I don't know if I believe WPC Zoom, is that, yes, that is Dr. Thornton, if you want to allow them in.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Mayor Bacozzi, Council President McAllister, and City Council members, as you are aware, Ms. Lynn Danbrook is Warwick's new superintendent. And as such, I thought it appropriate for her to introduce the school's budget for next year. But before I do turn things over to Ms. Danbrook, I did want to thank you all for the chance to work with all of you over the last 6 years. And I truly wish you all the best of luck moving forward. So with that, I will turn things over to Superintendent Danbrook to start the budget process this afternoon. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Cozy, Council President McAllister, and members of the City Council. Representatives from the school department are here today to answer any questions you might have. regarding the school committee's fiscal year 2022 adopted budget. To establish budget priorities, the budget managers from each department met to identify the crucial initiatives to fund in next year's budget. Requests have a shared focus and are aligned with the district's strategic plan. This collaboration made the budget process more efficient and meaningful. I am proud to say that the school department's budget that you have before you is student-centered. The funds in this budget support student achievement, student programs, and transportation for all eligible students in grades K through 12. I will now turn this presentation over to Robert Baxter, the Executive Director of Finance and Operations.
Thank you very much. Again, thank you very much to all members of the mayor's staff and to the mayor and to the all the members of the city council who are present. I know you have a long agenda, so I'll try to keep my opening comments brief and then I'll entertain questions. As Superintendent Danbrook mentioned and implied, fiscal 22 will be for us a rebuilding year. We are facing enrollment, revenue, and cost savings challenges, and we're working on, we've crafted a budget that addresses those. First and foremost, this budget, I have to emphasize, this budget is truly student-centered. Beyond that, it is a transformational budget in that fiscal 22, again, is a year which we plan to close a number of structural gaps. First of all, we're looking at improving student achievement, developing and creating student opportunities, closing the technology gap with one-to-one Chromebooks for all of our students, closing the curriculum gap, which we can talk to, but as in the future here, later on in the presentation, we've got a facilities gap where we're trying to get our facilities up to speed, and certainly all of this coming together to help close what we refer to as the enrollment gap. In other words, as Superintendent Danbrook stated, we've started with a clean slate. We've questioned all of our assumptions, all of our old assumptions, and we're looking and have developed new approaches to a lot of our old challenges. And this is the most important point. So let me explain what I mean, if you bear with me. All right, picture a Thanksgiving dinner. And we've got, multiple generations, and the little baby sister goes to the older sister and says, "Hey, why when we cook the turkey, are the turkey legs taken off the turkey?" And the older sister goes, "I don't know. Why don't you go ask mom?" I said, "Mom, when we take and cook the turkey, we always take the turkey legs off. Why do we do that?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I guess it's the way we were taught. And I guess it makes the turkey taste better. Why don't you go ask, my older sister, Aunt so-and-so. Auntie so-and-so, why do we take the turkey legs off? I don't know. Why don't you go ask grandma? Grandma, why do we take the turkey legs off? Well, when I first got married, my stove was only so big and I couldn't fit the whole turkey in. And so I took the turkey legs off." And so that kind of addresses the situation that we're in. The situation has changed and we need to adapt our processes and our practices to that and the way we look at our budget. And I believe Superintendent Danbrook and our staff on the academic side and on the fiscal side, we've all taken that same approach. And so a couple of times, if we get off track tonight, you might hear me reference turkey legs, and that means we're looking at it a little bit differently. And so this budget seeks to put the district in a new position, a position in which we're generating revenue from alternate sources, where we optimize the expense dollars that we do spend, and position the district in a way to retain and hopefully increase our enrollment. Specific examples include closing the gaps that I mentioned, technology, facilities, and achievement gaps, for instance, learning loss with funds from ESSER III. We're looking at offsite solar projects and onsite solar projects to reduce our expenses and hopefully generate additional revenue, which we can use again to strengthen our district. We've got an initiative to reclaim instructional space and improve our facilities. We're looking at replacing and enhancing our curriculum with so-called green curriculum, which I will admit is more for the academic team to speak to. We're looking again at one-to-one Chromebooks for all students in the district, which coming out of this pandemic should be obvious as to the importance and the need for that. And fully fund all of the instructional supplies. And you should say, you would think that would be a no-brainer, but in the past, it's been a struggle. And in this budget, Superintendent Danbrook fully funds the instructional supply requests from across the district. As you analyze this budget request, please keep in mind the following. First of all, turkey legs, right? We're not doing things the same way. Second, year-to-year comparisons between this year's request and the last 2 years are really, really not valid. They're incomparable years due to COVID. We discontinued operations more than a quarter sooner in fiscal 20, and fiscal 21 was certainly an atypical year. Third, $141 million out of the $174 million budget is salaries and fringe benefits. So that's 81% of our entire budget is fixed and driven by our staffing and the contractual obligations. So as we go through the non-staffing part of the budget, please keep in mind that the majority of our budget, 81%, is in the staffing side. And then even as we're going through the non-staffing side, please keep in mind that 22.6 million out of the roughly 33 million is of the remaining budget, that is the non-staffing budget, is fixed. And by that we mean, again, contractual obligations in terms and contractual obligations such as out of district tuitions, $12.4 million, and transportation, $10.2 million. So again, we've got 22.6 million out of that 33 million, can't really play with. That leaves a balance of $5 million. So the total, the 22.6 plus the $141 million in staffing represents 94% of our budget that's in those three categories: salary and fringe, transportation, and out-of-district tuitions. 6% is in everything else. So while we are extremely happy, we've got the entire team assembled to go through the that detail and entertain any questions, we would really are excited to talk to you about the strategic initiatives and the way we're using the resources that we're requesting for the other 94% of our budget. So in summary, we're requesting a local appropriation of $132,107,346. And that plus the other local sources of revenue bring our total local unrestricted budget to $174,400,000 roughly. You have before you our budget request and the presentation and documents, and I'll entertain any questions now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. First off, I would like to thank Dr. Thornton for his service to our city for the past 6 years, and we wish you the best in your next next challenge. And to the new superintendent, Superintendent Danbrook, we are pleased that you're here. We love that Warwick person is leading the Warwick cities. That this is great, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So at this time, are there members of the council that would like to ask questions? Councilman Sinapi.
Howdy. Less a question, more a comment, just so people are aware. So last year, I met with the school department on two occasions prior to the budget meetings for roughly 9 hours to parse through their budget with them. And that's how we helped shrink the gap, for those who might recall, between the original request and what ended up happening before the council. They were very helpful, and frankly, it was a helpful experience all around. This year, it went much more smoothly. Only took about four or five hours. Councilman Gebhardt was able to join for much of that time. And early on, it was clear that they approached budgeting differently this year. Thanks probably in large part to Superintendent Danbrook, because rather than having all the various departments within the school department requesting potentially the same things and having too much overlap, she apparently made a point to make sure there wasn't duplication, which is probably at least in part why we didn't have such a large request gap. That helped make things much simpler. And CFO Baxter also helped a great deal by, in his words, estimating more conservatively rather than with broad brushstrokes and just assuming for the best. He made a more realistic and practical approach. And also we went over there, TA, and it was nice to find out that rather than a 10.5 increase of the last TA, this one's only a 5, much different, much of an improvement, and much in the right direction for the sake of the city's budget. And so hopefully I'll be able to answer some things, but obviously the school department's here to take it away.
Thank you very much, Councilman. And I did want to note that I'd also like to thank all the teachers. This past year was like nothing we've ever seen. And they were total pros, and they adjusted, and they were able to give a great education to our students here in Warwick. So I just really wanted to say thank you to the teachers as well. Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to start off with a question to Rob. Rob, could you repeat the percentages that you said for salaries, fringe benefits, and travel, please?
Certainly. Salaries and fringe benefits is responsible for 81% of our budget, which is roughly $141 million. Planned for fiscal 22. These are fiscal 22 budget request numbers. $141 million, 81% of our budget. The balance of roughly $174 million is $33 million in non-staffing. And of that $33 million in non-staffing, $22.6 million is comprised in two categories, out-of-district tuitions and transportation, which is, busing for the students, for eligible students. And let's see, so those two combined, the $141 million plus the $22.6 million, which are relatively fixed, right? The contractual obligations, those are responsible for 94% of our budget. So salary, fringe, transportation, and out-of-district tuitions are responsible for 94% of our budget, leaving 6% for everything else.
Thank you, Rob. So I have more comments than questions. I think my comments just end up in a big giant question. So one of the things that I noticed is in tuition to other districts, 7% of our budget is to send kids elsewhere to other districts or to charter schools, wherever, 7% of our budget. That's, I think, a pretty concerning number. And then that brings us to the point where in this past year, we've lost another 400 kids elsewhere, going elsewhere. And, you know, we talk about maintenance of effort. We talk about we need more money. We don't have enough for this. We don't have enough for that. We only got 6% left to do what we need to do after we pay all these other items, including 7% of the budget for out-of-state tuition. So you do the math at $22,000 per student, and that's a cautious number because, you know, in our documents here, it says it's in excess of $22,000. So the cost to educate a child here in Warwick is $22,000 per student. We've dropped another 400 students this year. That's $8.8 million in cost that I don't see exist. And that's concerning. So from fiscal year 2019 to fiscal year 22, we've had an increase in the school budget of almost $8.5 million in 3 years. Almost $8.5 million increased costs in our school department. And we have the swing the other way of 400 kids not here at 22,000 per student. So the big question is, why? What's going on? It seems to me that all of these conversations that have been going on at these budget hearings year after year after year after year don't change. The costs keep running up, the student population keeps running down, and we have more students, it seems, every year pulling away from the Warwick Public Schools and going to other districts or other schools. Rob, how many children, or what was the percentage of the tuition to other districts over the previous few years? Do you have that?
Yes, yep. But if I may, if I could just go back to a couple of your comments as well, and I will give you that information, Councilman Lattiser, and I do have it with me, but just a couple of just clarifying points, just so that we're all on the same page. Out of the $12 million for out-of-district tuitions, about $6 million are for special services for what I would call tuitions to facilities that deal with and provide services to the students that we're not able to, provide appropriate services for within the district. So I just want to make sure, just to be clear. So half of that $12 million is for what I'll call special services type students, and the other half deals with the enrollment problem that you were talking about. Again, that's just not so much for you, but just for the public listening. And then the second point I wanted to address, I think it was more of a rhetorical question, but just you are correct that that in the past several budgets, our expenses have not followed the decline in enrollment. But I would suggest that this budget attempts to reconcile that because through the staff reductions that were adopted at the last school committee meeting to reduce enrollment as a result of reduce our staffing as a result of enrollment decline to correct that error. So again, I would say that, with the new look that we're giving to the current situation, that we are making the steps that we probably haven't made in the past. That said, let me get you the answer for your question. And hold on 1 second. If you can see me on the screen, I've got my big black book here. It's got all the answers. Let's see. Okay, Councilman Lattiser, you were asking, I think, how fast is enrollment to what I'll call charter schools, pathways, and career tech centers. How is that increasing over the past 3 years? Is that what you said? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just picked the number.
Yep, sure. Yeah. So if I go back, I'm going to go back to fiscal or school year 2018-2019. Our total, I have it in dollars. Our total was about 2.4, let's say $2.5 million in fiscal 19 or school year 18-19, and this year it has increased to 3.5, 4, about $5 million.
So why is that?
Well, to be clear, I mean, we're working on that, and that we're trying to identify. We've got a bunch of solutions that a bunch of suggestions that it's competitive pathways, our facilities, and a number of other issues.
And Councilman, I'm happy to jump in there as well. I think you may have heard, we actually have some legislation with Representative Shanley right now being heard, I believe, Wednesday on this very topic, where historically in Rhode Island, a student could go to another district, even if we have the same program in Warwick. And hopefully if we have passage on Wednesday, that would no longer be the case. So if we have automotive, we wouldn't be paying any more for a student to go to Coventry for automotive, and that's been happening. So that's one positive step we are making. If a program is unique in another district, we would still pay that tuition, but not if we have the same or substantially similar program. So historically, over the past several years, people for different reasons have gone to other districts. Some offer an interest in that pathway. Some honestly, I think for sports. Some I think just for a different zip code. It's not one answer. But this legislation hopefully would curb that. Students currently in the program could stay, and it wouldn't take effect till January of 2022, I believe.
And then if I may, Councilman Lattiser, just to add on to that. So I guess to be candid about it, we don't really have a firm understanding of that right now. However, And we need to know that answer. And working with Dr. Cecil, our plan is over the summer to go out and as part of our strategic planning process, to go out and interview stakeholders in the community, parents who've chosen to go to other districts, students, faculty, and just a broad range of folks to do that research and to identify the factors that are driving our enrollment decline. So I don't have a good answer for you tonight, as good as I'd like to have, but we're hoping that by the time that we sit down to write that plan, which is September, October timeframe, that we will have honed in on the primary causes for the enrollment decline.
Well, Rob, thank you. And with all due respect to you and the superintendent, I've been hearing, you know, these same comments. This will be the ninth budget session in a row. And that doesn't count the years of attending council meetings prior. So what I see is the trend has not changed. The tide has not turned. And we have the same thing. It's an ongoing thing. We have a declining enrollment, significant decline in enrollment, significant. It's about 5% again this year from last year. We see some of our students going elsewhere for whatever reasons. We see the costs of doing business increasing significantly from $170 million in 2019 to $186 million in fiscal year 2022. That's just unbelievable to me. And that 94% of the school budget, 94% is going to all those items, or those few items, those three items that you mentioned, Rob. If we had our budget in the private sector like that, I can assure you, you would not have any businesses anywheres because you would never, ever survive. So there's something radically wrong with the formula in the big picture. And the other point that is, when people are paying for a service, whether it be a plumbing service, whether it be a driveway, whether it be whatever it is, they expect to receive the best efforts for their money. And what we've been seeing here for the last several years is not particularly the case. So this something wrong. I don't know what the answer is. I'm not in the education department. I'm looking at it from strictly a small business perspective. And I know for certain, if my costs continued to escalate at the rate that the school department's cost continue to escalate year after year after year, and if my customer base, my client base, were to continue to decline year after year after year, I would not survive, nor would any other business survive. So I hope that with a new look or a new set of eyes on this, what I consider to be a serious problem in how we educate our children, how we can afford to educate our children, or how we can't afford to educate our children. I'm really hoping that this new set of eyes is going to be able to get a grip on it. And it is particularly concerning to me to hear, and obviously we read it in our documents, but to hear from Mayor Picozzi that the school committee is asking for an additional $500,000 more than the administration said was necessary to run the school department when we have a decline of 400 students. So those are my comments, Mr. President. There are concerns that I think from time to time over the last 9 years that I've been on the council, I've shared these concerns, or other colleagues have shared these concerns with the direction that we're going. And I still see us having the same conversations. Thank you, Mr. President. And thank you, Rob and Superintendent, for your comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. So let's see. I guess that before I get to my two questions, two very broad questions, that is, want to share a little bit of history. I haven't been on the council for quite as long as some of my colleagues. However, as one who, like many of us, has attended Warwick schools, have a lot of experience with seeing Warwick schools over the years. I suppose that my first question, which is looking at where Warwick schools is going, not just this coming year, but making sure that this budget is setting up Warwick schools for success in future years, would be, well, a little bit of background, I suppose, first. In 2011, I graduated from Rhode Island College, secondary education history degree, went to start applying to school systems for a job as a high school history teacher or social studies teacher. And that was the very same year that so many school systems all across the state were not hiring teachers, but instead laying off teachers, because not that there was a recession at that time in the year 2011, but rather because the recession of 2008, 2009, the true impacts of that were being seen in fall 2011, because that's when the stimulus money ran out. If memory serves, Warwick schools laid off 40 teachers that year. And all across the state, I believe that there were 1.5 or 2.5 high school history teacher positions that were open in the entire state, with Warwick, for example, laying off 4 high school history teachers. So I'm certainly not talking about net jobs. I'm talking about just the number of positions that were open. And so Warwick schools was absolutely not alone in feeling that fiscal cliff when the stimulus funds ran out. And so with the American Recovery Act funds that we're going to have for this coming fiscal year and the one after, I believe, I'm concerned that we don't want to see ourselves in a position of a structural deficit such that Warwick Schools comes to us, the council, asking for X million dollars to make up for funds that are lost in that we just don't have. And then the city council can't give money that we don't have. And then we see something on that type of scale that we were seeing just 10 years ago. So, and before getting to that one, I'll throw in the second question as well. I understand the request for an additional $500,000. And a little background on that as well. I think this all ties back to, in large part, to making sure that we have the programs to offer so that students are not choosing to go to other schools for, you know, the better zip code, so to speak, or, you know, the shinier new building or the like. It's important that we give students the resources that are needed to make sure that we're comparing well to our neighbors. I remember that there were programs back when I was in elementary school, middle school, ALAP, EOP, excellent programs. It's my understanding that we no longer have ALAP or EOP, for instance, and perhaps other school systems do. And when they have a newer building, they have these programs that we don't offer. Well, we're seeing $6 million go out the door because students are choosing other school systems, even though they're further away. So I suppose that my two questions, both in relation to the additional $500,000 request, is how is this $500,000 going to be used to provide programs to students so that we do something about these students who are choosing different programs over what Warwick has to offer? And also, how may this make a difference in terms of preparing Warwick schools so that we don't run into a fiscal cliff in a couple of years?
Okay, thank you very much. Those are great questions. Let me just give a brief overview, and then I'll turn the microphone over to my my colleague, Assistant Superintendent Bill McCaffrey. So first of all, where are Warwick schools going, you ask? So I love that question. And I think I just need to be perfectly clear for everybody who's listening. It is the commitment of Superintendent Danbrook, myself, and Assistant Superintendent McCaffrey to make 02, 8, 8, 6, 7, 8, and 9, et cetera, the desirable zip codes in the state, right? So that's where we know it's a tough road to hoe, but we need to turn it around, and we're committed to doing that. It's going to be a long process. We are looking at American Rescue, the American Rescue Plan funds as to help with that, but for non-recurring one-time only uses. So we are, again, I need to be perfectly clear, we are not planning to use those funds for recurring expenses that would then lead to a structural deficit. We are looking for, we are budgeting to use those funds for one-time only non-recurring expenses to help us close the technology, curriculum, et cetera, those gaps that I discussed sooner. And then as far as how will the $500,000 be used, let me pass the microphone over to my colleague.
President McAllister, members of the City Council, Councilman Ricks. $500,000 is essential in supporting the emerging pathways at our high schools, strengthening our middle level exploratory and project-based learning offerings, and strengthening for career and technical education programs. Also, we need to do a better job promoting what we have within our district and beyond. First, we would fund six emerging pathways at our high schools at a cost of $120,000. There would be four programs at Pilgrim High School: robotics, performing arts, biomedical, and computer science, and two programs at Tollgate High School: biomedical and computer science. The goal would be to have all six programs receive CT program approval in the 21-22 school year. Please note, in the 2021 school year, the Rhode Island Department of Education placed a moratorium on approving new programs. Second, we would fund 16 exploratory and 8 project-based learning programs at a cost of $240,000 at the middle level, at Winman, and at Warwick Veterans Middle School. The goal would be to improve our real-world applications within our schools. Also, when appropriate, we would have our middle-level offerings aligned with our secondary pathways and CTE programs. Please note, all students at the middle level participate in exploratories and project-based learning offerings. The third, we would fund 4 career and technical programs at a cost of $100,000. The 4 CTE programs are Electronics, Business and Marketing Academy, Marine Trades and Welding, and Electricity. The remaining $40,000 would be utilized to promote secondary offerings in our schools, in our community, and outside our community. Currently, we have 15 state-approved CTE programs. We need to increase the number of approved programs at Pilgrim High School, Tollgate High School, and the Career Center in order to meet the needs of students in Warwick. Although $500,000 is a significant amount of funds, it represents 0.4% in the school committee recommended budget. I would also add that the investment of $500,000 would help reduce tuitions that would be paid to other communities by strengthening our existing programs. Based on my informal research, biomedical, computer science, Academy of Business and Marketing are highly desirable by our students within our, by students within Warwick, and it would be to our benefit to support these programs. President McAllister and members of the council, I appreciate your time and consideration this evening on the school department budget.
Thank you very much. Councilman Gephardt.